pleased to welcome a guest to the Lineup Logic podcast here. A fantasy mind, much more polished and valuable than my own, more seasoned. Humbled, flattered to welcome NFL.com writer, the founder, creator of the Reception Perception Project. You guys probably already know the name. If you don't, for some reason, you need to learn the name. The man who has a PhD in route trees, Matt Harmon. How are you, Matt?
I appreciate that. That's a good title. I would love. Yeah, I guess if anybody has seen, I mean, I've seen more routes than probably any normal human should over the last 3 years working with Reception Perception. But yeah, really want to thank you for having me on. I'm excited to talk today. Like we were saying before we started recording, you sent over a ton of good questions that I'm happy to dish on.
Well, hey, first off, thank you to you. You know, like I mentioned, been following your work for a long time, and you know, the Reception Perception Project, you're working on NFL.com, fantasy hipsters, all that kind of stuff. It's just eye-opening, guys. This is next level, and it's fantasy football, and I know we're, for my listeners, most of us are still in baseball season grinding that out, but you know, it's time to start thinking about football, and I imagine you have had a very busy spring, summer, so you want to tell the people who don't already know what you launched with the help of the Fantasy Footballers, another great fantasy podcast, by the way, early in 2017. What are you guys working on?
Sure. So this offseason, I've been doing Reception Perception charting for the last, really, I launched the series back in the summer of 2014 prior to that NFL season, just as like an initial phase. So if your listeners aren't familiar with Reception Perception, like you mentioned, it's a methodology that I created to evaluate the wide receiver position. I go in over an 8-game sample size for NFL players, 6-game sample size for college prospects, and chart every single route that they run, you know, what type of routes they ran, how often they ran them, how often they created separation on those routes, which coverages were they most successful at getting open again. So really, it's trying to quantify the qualitative art of route running. And I've been doing that for about, this is the third season now in full that I've done. And this year, I decided to try to take it to the next level. And then the Fantasy Footballers brought me on to present over data on over 50 NFL wide receivers and 19 college prospects in their ultimate draft kit. So you can purchase that at receptionperception.com. There's a little picture of my cute little face there. If you go and hover your mouse over it, and it'll take you to a link to buy the draft kit. And like I said, you get more data on wide receivers than you ever possibly thought you could imagine. I'm really grateful for the Footballers giving me such an awesome platform to present this data, because like you mentioned, I've been slogging away charting all this through the spring and the summer, and it's always eye-opening to me, and I think that's why I like doing it so much.
Yeah, I mean, I was over on your blog on Backyard Banter, and I was, you know, I was kind of sifting through some of your earlier posts in the spring, seeing prospect scouting with the, like, date tags of like March 4th. I'm like, oh my God, Matt, you're already watching college rounds in March. We just finished the Super Bowl.
Yeah, man, it's when you're doing football, and I mean, I know you're talking about doing baseball and all that sort of stuff. I'm obviously working for NFL.com, just all football, and it is funny just, you know, you take like a little breather after the Super Bowl, and then it's like, all right, right into the draft, right into free agency. And it's crazy. The NFL's done a great job of making sure, like, you can never really ignore us. We're always demanding your attention.
So, I mean, the thing that you said that I caught my ear about Reception Perception was to quantify the qualitative art of route running. I mean, I think that is one of the better definitions, I guess. You created it. What is the origin story? I mean, how did you get into this idea that we have to be able to quantify this thing that, you know, a lot of guys can watch on film and tell you whether it's good or not? But for those of us who are, you know, not wide receiver coaches, we didn't do it professionally. We're not defensive backs. We don't necessarily know. How did you, just a sports journalist, come up with the idea of Reception Perception?
Well, it's pretty much just what you said there, and I tell people this all the time when they want to get a start in the industry. You should, the first, you know, obviously you should get out there and try to make connections, but the best way to get noticed is to take the purview of the sports world, or, you know, for the football world, if that's what you're into, and ask yourself, what's a piece of content or something you want to know that you're interested in that you don't see anybody else doing or anybody else talking about? And that's kind of the way I looked at Reception Perception. Was I think that wide receivers are a very misunderstood, like can be a very misunderstood position, and they're a difficult one to evaluate for the casual fan because, and it's not our fault. It's just the way it works, because when you're watching games on Sunday or Monday or Thursday night, the wide receivers are running off the screen. You don't get to see their full work, and any sort of wide receiver counting stat or even advanced metrics, they take in other variables like the quarterback. They're inherently super dependent on other variables like quarterback play calling, whether they even get a target or not, in order to accrue production. And I wanted to try to tell the rest of the story, because wide receivers are running, you know, 30 plus routes a game if they're regular starters, but you know, they're only getting targeted, you know, 8.5 times a game, something like that. So I wanted to fill in the rest of that data, and that's all about route running. And I find a lot of, like, you know, I was actually just tweeting something about this before we hopped on here. Like, I find the whole idea, like, well, you know, film don't lie or whatever, I find that, like, really kind of gross, because, like, we're all subject to our human error in when we view something and how we categorize it. And that's what I wanted to be really straightforward with reception perception. Like, did this guy get open on this route or not? And, like, that's my own subjective judgment, but it's more transparent than just saying, you know, I graded this guy a 7 out of 10 as a route runner, because, like, I don't really know what the hell that means. So that's kind of what I wanted to do with reception perception, was be really transparent, be upfront about, you know, this is what I see, and present it in a way that's easily consumable for readers.
Yeah, that is, it takes, because I think one of the things that fantasy, you know, fantasy football players, the average Joe that you describe, one of the things that we, and I put myself in that group, don't recognize as often, the degree of separation between these wide receivers is only slightly, very, very small, especially in how they produce, you know, whether it be, you know, by the end of the season or on a week to week basis. And so finding that edge and finding that extra data mining for those types of things that aren't necessarily dependent on quarterback scheme, game flow, very, very interesting project. So what do you look for, Matt, when you sit down and you watch all these routes?
Yeah, so I think the one thing that I also think is really fascinating with wide receivers in general is, like, what type of wide receiver are you? Because they're just so different. I mean, it's really almost pointless to try to compare a Jamison Crowder to, like, a Julio Jones, because they play the game so differently. And I think I'm often trying, as I'm charting and watching these routes, to try to discover, like, what archetype does this wide receiver fit into, and that can help you understand the game better, but also understand, you know, fantasy and what potential usage they might see better, in terms of, especially scouting them from the college level coming to the NFL, trying to find a fit there, because oftentimes I try to not necessarily look at what a wide receiver is not good at. I try to find out, like, what they're good at, what they can excel, and then how can they be used by a team in a certain way. So obviously trying to uncover routes and what they're doing, but it's mostly trying to find, like, what are their strengths and weaknesses and what sort of archetype do they fit into?
Interesting. So you are you comfortable saying that you feel like wide receiver can put himself in a bucket, and then once he's in that bucket, you can better understand what he's capable of?
Yes. I would say I'm pretty comfortable with that. I would also say, though, that one thing that I'm super excited for, because I say this is more of a grand view thought, but I said this on a podcast a while ago, and I really do believe it. Like, if I really wanted to do, you know, reception perception as a very, like, rigor, you mentioned, like, a PhD in route running. If I really wanted to do this as, like, a rigorous academic study, like, I would have spent 5 years, like, accumulating data so that you can better understand before ever talking about it, before presenting it, because then you can better understand trends and what the data means. Because I've made mistakes with the data. I believe the data is, like, speaks for itself, but you still need an analyst to interpret it. And because I'm not perfect, I've made misconceptions with that data, and I've missed things because I didn't really understand it yet. And, you know, again, but the audience doesn't care to wait for 5 years, because without a take, it doesn't really matter. So I think that that's something that I'm looking forward to as we go onward. Like, for example, do wide receivers change over their careers? Like, as guys start to hit, like, 30 years old, do they start to run different routes? These are things that I'm excited to, you know, begin to investigate more as we get farther along down the project's line.
just to be clear, if this was a baseball centered program, they would care. They would wait 5 years. They would wait until a proper sample size had accumulated and all of the different measurables had been. Those data guys are no joke. But I mean, it's true. I mean, that you're right to say that. But as the sample size grows, I'm sure you're learning. I guess the question is now in your experience, what do you see as the, you know, the greatest indicator of a wide receiver's talent or success? I mean, you talk about how they can be QB dependent, you know, scheme, system, game flow. I mean, everything can account for a wide receiver's success. But I think in a vacuum, what in your mind makes wide receivers in this day and age most successful?
Yeah, I think being in terms of talent, I would say route to route consistency is something I really value. Like consistently executing and getting separation and getting open on your routes is something that I really value. And I think that's where you start to see guys that have breakout potential before it happens. You know, obviously the most famous example with reception perception was Allen Robinson before the 2015 season. You could see as a rookie that he was executing on his routes, consistently creating separation all over the field. And then obviously that kind of came to a head when in 2015, the targets followed. So I think that's something that's something I really value is, you know, what are you creating separation at on a variety of different routes at a high degree? And obviously now with 3 years worth of data, I have a pretty good understanding of like where things fall from a percentile basis. You know, does this guy create separation at, you know, the 70th percentile versus the 55th percentile? And some guys definitely offer splash play potential. Like Brandon Cooks and Devontae Parker are good examples of guys that they make some splashy plays, and obviously that offers a lot of potential in fantasy. But then you see kind of their success rates in reception perception, and they're on the lower end. And I think that doesn't go to show that they're bad necessarily. I wouldn't make that argument, but I would say that they don't have that same consistent execution on a route-to-route basis. And that maybe makes them, again, more of those splash players than consistent number one receiver guys.
Makes sense. I think the question is then what value does that separation, that route consistency, I mean, does this in your mind actually create to fantasy value or most consistently, or is it simply an indicator that said this could create fantasy value for you?
Well, I think it goes with the age old question, like how much does talent matter for fantasy football? Not as much to me. Like, obviously, what matters for fantasy most is usage, pace of play, opportunity. I do think sometimes talent can create opportunity. And as I've mentioned, there are cases like that. However, I think the reception perception is more of a talent evaluation tool than it is a predictor of fantasy success. Sometimes those things can go hand in hand, but it's only one piece of the puzzle. Like, I would never make an argument that, hey, you should draft this guy because his reception perception is good. You know, Willie Snead's a good example of a player who's had a good reception perception his first two seasons, but he's not somebody that's necessarily been a high-end, consistent fantasy asset because the volume hasn't been there. You know, he's been behind guys like Michael Thomas, Brandon Cooks. This year, he's heading into a bigger role. That's when you can say, okay, he's heading into a bigger role. We know he's a good player based on his reception perception. Now these two things are matching up, and that's what you want to see to create a good fantasy pick.
That's really interesting to note. I mean, it's a collision of talent and opportunity, right? You know, is it somebody always says the best ability is availability?
Right.
Right. And, you know, I think that kind of translates to opportunity is, you know, DFS players, the number one thing we're looking for in the NFL is targets. And if you don't have opportunity, you're not creating, you know, I don't care how good your routes are. If you're open, it doesn't matter if nobody's throwing you the ball. I guess the we're going to jump into the 2017 season. I got a lot of player specific questions for you. But this is kind of a higher level question about the next level of NFL, the next level of fantasy football. I mean, is reception perception football's version of sabermetrics? Are we approaching the StatCast era of the NFL now, where everything is going to be measured for speed, for distances? I mean, are you the Bill James of football? Is the question, Matt?
That's a great question. I think that football is tough. It's difficult to evaluate statistically because, like I mentioned, with wide receivers are a great example. It's so hard to isolate different variables in the equation. Like, football is so much more of a all things are firing on the same cylinder. Like, all things are firing on different cylinders. The quarterback needs the wide receiver. The wide receiver needs the quarterback. The running back needs the quarterback, the offensive line. Like, everything goes together. It's so much more of a team sport. And I think that it's tougher to isolate than in sports like baseball, where, you know, you just have the one guy hitting the ball. And you know, it's different. But so I don't know if we're approaching the same level of that, but I think that one thing that I'm coming around to, and not only do I do a lot of work with reception perception, but I also do a lot of other analytics work, especially like with the next gen stats that I think with the NFL, the tracking data that we get from the chips within the player, I think that's going to reveal so much more next level data that we haven't even begun to process yet. You know, we've only been doing that for 2 years, and there's just so much more that can be done. I think that we are going to new levels of football analytics, but I think that with football, the way I look at it, I think that analytics might perhaps be the best way to tell you what happened. You know, I think that, again, saying for an analyst to be like, well, you know, Brandon Cooks is a great route runner, or I think he is a poor route runner. That doesn't really tell you, that tells you something, but I don't think it tells you what happened. But I think for things like reception perception to be like, yeah, he had a 80% success rate on slant routes, I think that's a better way to tell you what happened. But I think you will always need good analysts, good evaluators, good writers to tell you the why. So I think that's the way I kind of see the future of analytics at the NFL level.
Yeah, and I think it's a great time to be a like really geek out about football. I mean, I think that the sports world and the fantasy world in particular has opened our minds to new levels of you know, geekdom about the intricacies of this game, even though it's so, like you mentioned, so kind of explosively team oriented. Everything happens at the exact same moment. It's just exciting. It's really fun to break down the why, and I, you know, that's what I love to do. But we got a lot of questions in general that could lead to a lot of whys. So I got to talk about, we got to start talking about the 2017 season. There's a lot coming up here, all right? And I got to start, you know, I'm not going to start with the top four guys on the leaderboard as far as ADP. We all know Odell, Jordy, you know, Antonio Brown, Julio. They're all great investments. That's fine. Great. They're going to be gone. The first 5 minutes of your draft are not very exciting because you know who's going to get. I think the next question is one of the bigger names that's popping up on the back half of the, like, first round talent draft class is Mike Evans. Guy I'm a believer in. Like, I love this kid. Physical freak, absolutely. Had the hands issue, but I think Jameis is poised for a third-year breakout. He's seen enough from some stuff. We saw the Bucs kind of knocking on the door last year. Should we buy into the Mike Evans hype?
Yeah, so I agree with you. I love Mike Evans, the player. I think he's a huge big time talent, right up there with those other guys you mentioned in terms of the, you know, big four or whatever, big three. I and the reception perception is a great tool to tell the story of Mike Evans. And this was why, even after a quiet 2015 season where you mentioned he had a lot of drops, he didn't catch as many touchdowns, I was still totally in on him because we know he's a big receiver. We know he can win the ball in the air, but if you look at his success rate versus man coverage scores over the 3 years of his career, as a rookie in 2014, he was 62.9% success rate. That's just under the league average. But in 2015, despite all of those drops, you know, and what I would say are mostly random plays, he still boosted his success rate versus man coverage score to 68.9%, which is great for a big receiver like that. And then obviously in 2016, he had a massive season. His success rate jumped again to 70.3%. So I think that's the type of thing that reception perception is really great for. It's showing that, like, yeah, the production didn't necessarily line up with what we thought in 2015, but he was still improving as a route runner, improving as a technician. And obviously that culminated in a massive 2016 season. So I'm really in on Mike Evans, the player, the talent. The one area I do have concern with, you know, at his average draft position in fantasy leagues and as like a clear, you know, first round pick in some people's eye, is that I do expect the Bucs to be a little bit of a better team. We saw in the second half of the season, his volume really fell off in games where the Bucs were more successful, where they were running the ball more. And I do think that, like, that, you know, we saw the same thing happen kind of with DeAndre Hopkins in 2015, where he had this massive volume inflated first half of the year, second half of the year, the Texans became a better team. And he was more like you know, the wide receiver 11, wide receiver 12 in that second half. But I think we could, and I'm not projecting like a massive fall off that Hopkins experienced. I still think Evans will be a top eight fantasy receiver, but I don't know that he's necessarily going to give you the same punch that we saw in the first half of last season. So I'm still totally in on Mike Evans, the talent, but I do think there are some questions to ask about his fantasy outlook this year.
Yeah, and well, scheme makes a difference. You know, are they going to hammer the ball? Are they going to run the ball? We'll see. I mean, a lot has to unfold in that backfield. There's a lot of question marks there anyway. All right, the other big offseason story, Brandon Cooks. All right, we know he's talented. The whole, you know, the media cycle freaked out when he became a Patriot. You know, you have this wonderful, this guy who's been basically blessed with some of the best quarterback talent in the league. You go from Drew Brees to Tom Brady. But investing from a fantasy perspective, investing in Patriots not named Thomas Edward Patrick Brady can be a very frustrating experience. Is the Brandon Cooks hype just noise? I mean, or are they going to be spreading the ball around like a classic Patriots offense is? Or are we to believe that these Randy Moss type numbers that people are talking about are really going to happen?
Yeah, I'm totally out on Brandon Cooks at a wide receiver 13 cost, which is where he goes off the board in typical redrafts. Like, so here's the thing. I think Brandon Cooks is a great big play threat. He's never been somebody that's been great in reception perception. His success rate versus press coverage last year, 31.7%, was the lowest of all those 50 receivers I charted for the Fantasy Football's Ultimate Draft Kit. I do not think he is, like I said, a consistent number one receiver, and I think that's why we saw a rookie in Michael Thomas usurp him very quickly last year for that role in New Orleans, and why I think the Saints were okay with trading him away. Now, I loved the trade for the Patriots because I thought he brought a different dimension to their team that they did not have already. However, I don't really understand any argument that thinks he is in a better fantasy position now with the Patriots than he was with the Saints. The Saints are a more pass-heavy team than the Patriots have been historically. They have a worse defense that puts them into more pass-heavy situations than the Patriots do. I don't really see how Cooks approaches 120 targets, which is really, he's going to have that amount if he's going to pay back a wide receiver 13 price tag. Because look, you know, I think that obviously they wanted to bring him in and they will prioritize getting him the ball, but Julian Edelman is still there. Gronk is still there. And I think that Edelman, you know, his targets will come down from what they were last year, but I'm not going to be the one that predicts when that mind meld with Tom Brady ends. And the fact that they re-signed him to a new contract just furthers that point. We know Gronk will demand 120-ish targets if he's healthy for a full season. And I think people forget, like, end-of-year finishes are always the most, you know, they can really cause people to make mistakes with fantasy. Like, because Cooks consistently finishes as a top 13, top 12-ish fantasy receiver, but the week-to-week journey getting there is exhausting with Cooks. It was even that way in a pass-friendly offense in New Orleans, and I think it will be even more so in a more crowded house here in New England. So, yeah, I mean, there are not many picks that I have, like, completely red-lighted more than Cooks at a wide receiver 13 cost.
And it's interesting because right there at, you know, at an ADP of 13, which I think is pretty aggressive, and I'm looking at some different ADP boards, he's definitely a consensus. It looks like people are interested in him in the second round. But if we're looking at that 13 spot, a name that pops up that I feel like is one of the most underrated fantasy names out there, Doug Baldwin. Mm-hmm. Is Doug Baldwin the most underrated fantasy receiver that there is?
Yeah, I think he's definitely underrated. I mean, you know, he's another one that is like the week to week journey with Doug Baldwin can be, it's not as exhausting with Cooks because he doesn't offer quite as frightening of a floor, but he's definitely a spiked week player. But he's someone that has held about the same target share in the offense the last 3 years, but Seattle's pass volume has consistently gone up the last 3 years. He is a super efficient receiver. I think he's the best slot receiver in the NFL, and he plays with a hyper-efficient quarterback in Russell Wilson, who had a down year last year, and Baldwin still paid back his average draft position, despite the fact that everyone was pretty convinced he would regress, and obviously he didn't catch 14 touchdowns again, but he set career highs in catches and targets and yards. So I'm in on Doug Baldwin at that wide receiver 11 cost, kind of in the, he goes off the board typically in the early third round, and I'm fine with that, especially if I've picked another wide receiver, you know, ahead of him. Like if I've gone, you know, one of those big three wide receivers and I can get him in that third round range, then I love that. Cause like I said, he offers a high weekly ceiling, and I think people forget that, but a safe season long floor.
Fair. I think the floor. Yeah. And I think, you know, the question is about whether or not how hurt was Russell Wilson last year? I think that that's a realistic question. And the question of how good is the Seattle offensive line is one that remains to be answered too, because I think that could affect a lot of what happens over there. All right. You watched as much Allen Robinson as I did last year. I'm certain of it. As an owner of Allen Robinson, truther, I love the guy. Was last year like a slump, an honest representation of talent, regression, or can we just blame Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles?
Yeah, I think that last year was, I think it was a down year for Robinson as a player. His reception perception shows that he had more drops, a lower contested catch rate, lower success rate versus coverage scores across the board, as excluding zone coverage, where he did set a career high with over 80%. But press and man were definitely lower than previous years, although they were not disastrous. They, like I said, they were lower than in 2014 to 2015. I think even he would say, and there's a good article by Tyler Dunn of Bleacher Report, if your listeners want to Google that, where even he says like last year was a down year for him. It was not up to his expectations. So I think but it's been the clear outlier in terms of his career as a, you know, route runner and technician, etc. So I do think it was a down year for him as an individual, but a lot of it, you know, is obviously the variance of the quarterback. And, you know, I think we did see, you talk about blaming Gus Bradley. We did see Doug Marrone, when he took over in the last two games, really use him more as a flanker, use him on some shorter routes and get him into better positions where he doesn't just consistently have some of the most high degree of difficulty targets. Like he's a downfield threat, and it just, there weren't a lot of layups in that Jacksonville offense last year in terms of what he did as a route runner. So hopefully going forward this year, we see more of a diverse approach for Robinson to get targeted on, like I said, some more of those layup routes. I think it was just a perfect storm of, you know, the complete other side of variance that we saw in 2015.
Got it. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see him somewhere, hopefully settle somewhere in the middle. And, you know, if Blake Bortles can settle down and stop throwing it to the other team, maybe we'll see a better year from A-Rob. All right. I have unbridled bias that I need to keep in check. And I'm coming to you, Matt, for that exact thing. I love having slot receivers. I love having them as flex plays. I love having them in my wide receiver three, like unbridled bias for guys like Stephon Diggs, Manuel Sanders, Golden Tate, Jarvis Landry. Is this a wise take? Should I be touting these guys? Or, I mean, do you think that the role, the size, are there limitations on these guys that, you know, limit their fantasy upside too much that we shouldn't really be investing in them?
So I want to take out Diggs from this equation, because I think of all these guys, and these guys all sort of go off the board, you know, in similar ranges in redraft right. leagues, anywhere from like the fourth to, you know, for guys like Landry, maybe he goes as high as, and Golden Tate maybe goes as high as the fourth round in PPR leagues, but like the fourth to sixth round range is where these guys are all coming off the board. Diggs is really the only one of these guys that I think has a path to wide receiver one upside, because he's the top target on his team. He's also a guy that can win deep despite being, you know, a slot route runner. But I think when you're building fantasy teams, like I love having these guys as well, because they do typically have really good weekly floors. They're also guys that can be used in the red zone. They have some touchdown upside, you know, not a blanket statement here, but they do have some sort of path to a weekly ceiling, especially in PPR formats. But, you know, I don't necessarily want to build a roster with all slot guys, because I want some of those, you know, guys like a DeSean Jackson's the classic example of that, really tough to predict, but definitely a weekly hammer sort of player. So I don't want to necessarily stack like three slot receivers together, but if I can have two of them with another guy that can put you over the top from a week winning perspective, because I mean, I think especially in drafts, we always get caught up in, again, season long totals and what do these guys project from a season perspective. But the goal is to win your week. You know, you've got to score more points than the guy or girl putting up a lineup across from you. And in order to do that, I think you do want to build some more complementary rosters and just stacking the same type of wide receiver together.
Makes sense. I think that's a fair, keep me in check, right? Now I don't have to draft all of these guys in the fourth and the fifth round. All right, we got a couple platoon type questions here because there are some, you know, there. I think training camp is coming. We're going to learn a lot more. We're also going to hear a lot more noise. But, you know, the combination of training camp and preseason should start to sort out some of these questions. But one of the issues that I have, you know, I really have a close eye on the situation in Washington. I mean, Kirk Cousins, for all the things that he went through last year, he still threw for 4,000 yards or more. He can sling the ball. He may not be long for Washington, but the man can really, really throw a football. They have so much talent, though, in that wide receiving core. And, you know, Jordan Reed just went on the PUP list. Who knows how healthy he'll be? But we still have Josh Doctson. We now have Terrell Pryor. Who finishes as the number one wide receiver in Washington this year?
I have it projected as Jamison Crowder to finish with the most targets. Okay. And I have – so here's the interesting thing about Washington, because I mentioned Brandon Cooks is a player that I've kind of red-lighted at wide receiver 13. Right behind him on Fantasy Football Calculator's ADP, wide receiver 14, Terrell Pryor in the mid-third round. That's at officially a red-light point for me. Like, I think you're paying for Pryor at his absolute best range of outcomes there. When I project the Washington offense, if you think – I mean, we like you mentioned, Jordan Reed – is he going to be healthy an entire season? I have no idea. But if you just project him for like a 19% of the team targets and Crowder for right around the same level, that leaves just about, you know, 19% of the team targets left for Terrell Pryor too. Washington's never been a funnel wide receiver offense. And I like Pryor. I like the idea of Pryor in Washington. I think more than I like the paying that kind of price in fantasy for him. I think that Pryor has a lower floor than people are accounting for. So give me Crowder for a lower draft cost. And also, I just think he's the type of wide receiver that works really well with Kirk Cousins in those short to intermediate areas. So he's the one that I like taking the most at his cost.
I love that take. I love Jamison Crowder. I mean, you watch him and he was electric across the middle of the field. It was always, he's easy to root for too. But yeah,
well, you just mentioned those slot receivers are your babies, and this is another one. So there you go, add them to the list.
Oh man, that's gonna be my whole bench. Yeah, and I think the thing is, people forget Terrell Pryor was probably the best skill position player in Cleveland. That, I mean, Isaiah Crowell was excellent, but who else? Corey Coleman goes down early in the year with that, you know, hand injury. And you know, week to week, Terrell Pryor was probably the most explosive offensive football player. And so what other choice did that Cleveland offense have but to try and get the ball in his hands? All right. Same question for Tennessee. Ton of upside in this wide receiving core. It's like all of a sudden Marcus Mariota walked into, you know, just an unbelievable amount of talent. You Corey Davis, who's one of the most explosive rookies on the board. People are projecting him very highly. I'm very interested to hear what your position is on Corey Davis. Enter Eric Decker, old man Decker, and but Rishard Matthews was the number one receiver in that offense last year. Who of these guys is the most valuable for the Tennessee Titans?
I think it's Decker if he's still, you know, somewhat the same player that we've seen in years past, simply because he has always been a historically very efficient touchdown scorer. Especially in the red zone. And now he's playing with one of the most efficient touchdown throwing quarterbacks over his first two seasons in Marcus Mariota. I think that's a really good marriage. I expect him to lead the wide receivers in targets again if he's right. That's always the caveat. And then the rest of the guys, as you mentioned, Corey Davis and Rishard Matthews, while I think Tennessee is going to throw the ball more this year than they have in years past, I still think it's going to be a run heavy offense, and that just doesn't leave much target volume for the other two players in Rishard Matthews and Corey Davis, because Delanie Walker is still there too, who I think should probably be the favorite to lead the team in overall targets. So to me, I think Matthews and Davis kind of cancel each other out. I don't think either one of them approaches 100 targets if Decker and Delanie Walker are both healthy for the entire season. So I don't think really either one of them matter too much for fantasy in 2017.
Have you put Corey Davis in a bucket? Does he fit a mold? Like, do we have a comp for Corey Davis, or what do you think on him?
Oh, yes. I think he is he's going to be a number one receiver in the NFL. I mean, the Titans clearly think they're two. They took him fifth overall in the NFL draft. When you looked at his reception perception from his college years, it really compared favorably to Sammy Watkins as an NFL player. So I didn't see that comp for him very often, but I think both of those guys are big. They're big-ish receivers, you know, not like not the Calvin Johnson level big, but they're big-ish receivers, about 6'2". I think Davis is 6'3". They're both guys that are really quick. They're route runners that can win at all levels of the field, but they're hyper dangerous on those like slant and crossing patterns and getting them in the middle of the field to break tackles after the catch. Neither one of them had above average contested catch rates. So, you know, they're not, again, those 50-50 ball type receivers. So I think that's the type of player that Davis is going to be in the NFL. And I think that fits really well with Marcus Mariota. So in years to come, I'm really in on him. You know, Decker only signed a 1-year deal. I just think for this year, I think if Decker is 100% healthy, then he should be the favorite to, you know, gobble up those middle of the field targets and score the most touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, and Decker's probably a late round steal that most people or think are going to be washed up. So keep an eye on him in your draft boards. That's interesting. Well, I guess here's a quick question. Now that we're on Corey Davis, or Mike Williams in Dynasty?
Davis, not even a hesitation. I think he's a better player. I think he's in a better situation to, you know, eventually be his team's number one receiver. And Mike Williams, I know this is mostly just for this year. Like, I think his 2017 is getting dangerously close to being a complete wash because of his back injury. And he's already in a really crowded house out there in Los Angeles. I should say out here in Los Angeles now with the Chargers. Yeah. So, yeah, give me Davis. And really, again, not even close.
Yeah, and I think people underestimate the fact that Davis and Mariota are on a much closer timeline. You know, like we underestimate timelines sometimes in football, but as far as developing a team rapport, you know, on the same age line, you know, Davis and Mariota certainly have a better chance to do that than Mike Williams and Phil Rivers, even though Phil Rivers is obviously a proven commodity in this league. So I like that call.
Yeah, but they did just trade for Cardale Jones. So QB of the future, Cardale Jones, Los Angeles Chargers.
Oh my God. I love that though. You know, I almost completely a mobile quarterback who can really throw the ball. Well, I guess Cardale Jones was pretty mobile at Ohio State, right?
Yeah, he's like a Dante Culpepper super light version. So I don't know. I do think it's an interesting trade. They needed like a developmental player there in Los Angeles, you know, because they've had Kellen Clemens as the number two for years. And hey, they were working out RG3, and it was like, ugh, anything but more Robert Griffin, please.
Please don't let us be the RG3 team this year. Yeah. All right, here's a personal question for you. Redraft leagues, whatever it is, in your auctions, I don't care, any style, format, it's late, it's 13th round and beyond, people are getting punchy, your roster looks solid, you're taking some flyers on your bench. Who is the wide receiver that you cannot avoid? You keep taking him, he keeps showing up, you have locked on to him in these late rounds.
Yeah, two of like my guys here I keep picking are Sterling Shepard and Tyler Lockett, and especially Lockett. Lockett's a guy that I overpaid for last year. I think I caused a lot of other people to overpay for him too, with a really good reception perception evaluation. But, you know, and lesson learned, again, don't make fantasy decisions just based off talent. But look, Lockett's a good player. I think as a good consistent route runner, I believe that through his reception perception. But even taking that out of the equation, we know he has spike week potential. We know he is a big play threat, again, playing with a really efficient quarterback in Russell Wilson. I don't think that he's going to necessarily start getting 120 targets and the Seahawks are going to air the ball out. So I don't think he's going to be a consistent week to week fantasy asset. However, like I said, he has spike week potential. He's going off the board right now in the 14th round, wide receiver 68. Per fantasy football calculator, if he's healthy, again, you know, always the caveat, but if he's healthy after that leg injury, I think he outkicks that and finishes like as the wide receiver 40 in fantasy leagues, which is right around where the wide receiver 2 in Seattle typically lands anyways. So that's fine with me. And I think, like I said, it's mostly about the spike week potential. We know he has big playability. So he's a guy that I consistently end up taking there in the double digit rounds.
Yeah, and I love the Sterling Shepard call. I think, like, He's just too talented.
Yeah.
I mean, I know everybody's worried about Brandon Marshall, and that's legitimate. But how healthy can Brandon Marshall be week to week at that age, you know? And are they going to let him run all those routes between the 20s, or are they just going to use him in the red zone? Because that's what he is. He's a massive red zone threat. So I think Sterling Shepard could be a steal as well. I love that. All right, I got a little game here, a little word association, Matt. I have gone down into the fifth round and beyond, okay? It's more or less fifth round. Anybody who has an ADP on the wide receiver list, ADP below 25, or 24, excuse me. So basically what we're looking at is an overall fifth round pick in 12-team standard leagues. I want you to give me a one-word hot take. What's one thing that comes to mind when you think of these guys? And it doesn't have to be a very hot take. It could be a medium, you know, lukewarm take. It doesn't. You ready?
Yep. Let's do it.
All right. Martavis Bryant.
Yes. Just total yes.
Yes. That's you. It's exactly what I wanted to hear. All right. Good. Kelvin Benjamin.
Fine. Like. And let me explain that, just because, like, it's gotten to the point where he's so cheap that I have to take a chance there at that, because it's just a cheap path to upside. I mean, to touchdown potential in the sixth round. So, like, I don't think Kelvin Benjamin's that good, but fine. I'll do it.
Fine. The intonation, audience, note the intonation. That's very important.
Yeah, exactly.
Pierre Garçon.
Ideal.
Interesting. Oh, can we unpack that? Sorry.
Yeah, sure. I think he's a damn good player. His 74% success rate versus man coverage last year finished at the 88th percentile in terms of reception perception history. So I think he's good. He's in basically the exact same situation he found himself in 2013 with Kyle Shanahan on a 3-13 Washington team where he led the NFL in reception, or either receptions or targets. But either way, he finished with over 100 receptions and 180 targets. So, I mean, I think he's just in an ideal fantasy spot to outkick his ADP.
And I think people forget how efficient, like, Brian Hoyer is a journeyman, but
right,
he's not that bad. Like, he was the best option the Bears had going last year. Interesting. Okay. Dante Moncrief.
I'm going to cheat and say two words, but it's time.
Okay. That's good. That's nice. Cam Meredith.
One word association for Cam Meredith. Approve. I approve.
Approve. Okay. Yeah. I think you have to. It's about price with Cam Meredith, right? If he falls to you, fine, take him.
No, I mean, I say that in terms of, like, I really approve of him as a player. I'm totally in on the Cam Meredith thing.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So you, all right. Good. Even with Kevin White possibly healthy.
Ugh. God, hey, I can't think of a reason to be optimistic about Kevin White. I mean, there's been evaluations this offseason, like, he has to, like, relearn to run. I think he's just been devastated by injuries. He's completely off his developmental, like, timeline. I think Cam Meredith is the favorite to lead that team in targets, because I think he's really the only, I mean, the rest of those guys, even beyond Kevin White, are, like, just a bunch of total question marks and journeymen and guys who have been disappointing in their career. So I think Meredith he's the only one that's put good film together over the last, like, calendar year. So that's why I like him.
Yeah. And I mean, there's been spots where he's been great. And there were some games last year where he looked excellent. Kenny Britt.
Careful.
Yeah. I think that's a good word.
Like, don't push it too far. You know what I mean? I see people on Twitter that tweet about, like, just what an outrageous value Kenny Britt is. And I agree. I think he's obviously in a good spot ADP wise right now, you know, wide receiver 50, like, he's going to finish higher than wide receiver 50, but he's still, even though he's not awful, but he's still Kenny Britt in the Browns offense. Like, you can't really get him higher than wide receiver 36 in your projections.
Yeah. I mean, he did succeed last year in the Rams offense. So, right. I mean, you know, the poor guy, can we get him on a decent team? Tyrell Williams.
Legit. Yeah.
I think the exit of Mike Williams is probably, you know, or the Mike Williams hype train is probably the best thing to happen to Tyrell Williams' value, because you can get somebody who Philip Rivers already has a rapport with, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Chargers receiver core, even if Mike Williams has kind of a lost rookie year, which, you know, it's starting to look like that way if he doesn't get a ton of offseason training time because of this back injury, even then, it's still a crowded house. Keenan Allen is back if he's healthy. You know, there's the two tight ends. They've got Gates and Henry still there. Travis Benjamin's a player they paid money to. Do they? I mean, it seemed like they wanted to replace Tyrell Williams, but it doesn't look like they're going to get that chance. And as I said, he's legit. I think he is. He's good. So he's definitely cheap right now at wide receiver, 40-ish price tag. So, yeah, I mean, I'm in on that.
All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, Matt, that was really fun. So, I mean, basically my team is going to be slot receivers and Martavis Bryant. I'm pretty pumped about it. But more importantly, where can people find this fantasy gold, this reception perception online?
So if you go to, like I said, receptionperception.com, there's a page there with all my rookie articles, and right there towards the top right hand corner, there's a little picture of my goofy looking headshot. And if you just hover your mouse over, you can click on there and there's a link to purchase the ultimate draft kit with the fantasy footballers. And not only do you get access to all their great, you know, tiers, rankings, projections, you get access to 50 profiles of reception perception receivers, and you get access to success rates on every route, all the routes that they run. It's just more information at about wide receivers than you ever knew you needed.
Yeah, and I think, guys, you can't underestimate the kind of advantage you have on your league mates who have, you know, kind of traditional notions of who's going to be successful. And you have an advanced understanding of the degrees of separation between certain guys that you're tying your teams to. So you want to go next level, get there next level, receptionperception.com. I imagine they can also find the content if they head over to Fantasy Footballers or find you on Twitter. Matt, where are you on Twitter?
@MattHarmon_BYB.
@MattHarmon_BYB. Look for Matt Harmon. Hey, I love the weekly targets article that you guys do over at NFL.com. Are you still going to be doing the targets, the weekly breakdown of receivers the Monday morning?
Yeah, man, the opportunity report. It's the big beast that franchise does the running backs. I do the wide receivers and tight ends, the passing game. So, yeah, that's I think it's good content, and it's something that I hope we continue to do this year.
Awesome. Awesome. Absolutely. All right. ReceptionPerception.com. Everybody check it out. MattHarmon_BYB. And of course, on NFL.com, you will see his mugshot there. Go ahead and pay attention to anything with his name on it. Matt, it has been an absolute pleasure. I'm like legitimately getting excited about fantasy football now, even though I'm up to my eyes in baseball. So I thank you very much for getting me pumped up here. And it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This is a blast.
All right. Take care. Guys, if you need more from Matt Harmon, you know where to find it. Other than that, continue to listen to Lineup Logic. We're going to be rolling out more NFL content as the preseason comes along. Thanks for tuning in, and we will check in soon.